What's up, everybody? Welcome to day 27 of RPG A Day 2022. How has Horgus changed?
Hey, Joe. I do hope you play the other call, acknowledging the dragons, but I also feel you want to drop this, so I hope you play that call and then drop this. But I also hope you tell us about the kick-ass time you're going to have on town tonight as the time of this call. I hope you have a lot of fun with your friends. And I hope you have a great weekend, man. I will talk to you later.
No, I don't want to drop it. And I'm totally going to play your call about dragons. And then Daniel's got a couple more calls on the same topic. So, yeah, we're going to get back into it. But since you asked, last night it was pretty fun, man. It was good to go out. It was one of my former coworkers' birthdays. This guy who was basically the general manager at the restaurant that I used to work at when I first started. He was there for like the first year and then ended up leaving to go back to school and do all kinds of stuff. And that's when I became the kitchen manager. And then our other buddy, Kelly, she became the bar manager. So yeah, it was his birthday, and Jake and him are in a band together. They play music together a lot. So they, performed, they're just kind of like a three piece band. It's just drums, bass, and a singer. And they just do it for fun, but Alon really likes to play. So it was fun. I went and saw those guys at this bar, it was just good to get out. And then Jake and I came back to my place and had a few beers and just kind of hung out and shot the shit for a while. It was nice. It was good to get out, have some fun. Yeah, man. I'm pretty tie-tie today, though. It's funny. I'm just out of practice when it comes to drinking. It is. It's a skill, right? And I'm just, I used to be really, really good at it. But yeah, now not so much. Which that's totally fine. What else? We got screens installed in all our windows today. That's awesome. I've been trying to get these put in since we moved in, which at time of recording, Monday or tomorrow, Sunday, the 28th will mark 1 month of us living in this house. And yeah, we've been trying to get screens in here since before we moved in, but they're in now and they're awesome. I love them. It's nice to not have to worry about flies and mosquitoes and spiders and all that crap getting into the house. The one bummer is that I can no longer feed the crows from my room or even from inside the house. I now have to go outside, and the crows were present and very vocal, but they were shy with me being outside. They wouldn't come down and grab any of the peanuts while I was out there. The squirrel, my little squirrel buddy, on the other hand, he was down. He didn't give a shit if I was out there. But I, you know, I was out there. I sat down. I didn't move. I stayed real. The only time I would move is when I kind of fling out another little peanut, and the crows were watching and they were squawking. But they wouldn't come down. So it's going to take some more time for them to get acclimated to me being there, because I'm not trying to hide from them or anything. But, you know, it's all part of the process. One day at a time, making friends. I just got to kind of start over now. Hopefully, they'll put two and two together pretty quick that, oh, wait, these are the peanuts. These are probably the dudes who was giving us given them to us before. But yeah, man, pretty mellow Saturday. I baked some brownies today. They turned out really nice. I do love me some brownies. Brownies are really good. And yeah, the topic for today is, how has my character, who I've been discussing, Horgus Gworm from the Wrath of the Righteous campaign, how has he changed over the course of the adventure? And it's pretty cool. He's, you know, I think he's changed a lot. His, despite his bluff and bluster yesterday, he feels pretty strongly connected with this group. of PCs, and it's pretty awesome because he's written as such a dick. Like, he's just a jerk the way he's written in the adventure, and it explains why and everything, and I just love it. And he's such a fun character to play. Horgus is one of my favorite NPCs I've run in a while. Though there are a couple that are pretty awesome NPCs in this adventure. But we'll get to those later on. But yeah, I think Horgus has changed a lot. I think he's really, you know, he's seen that not everybody in the world is out there for greed. Not everybody cares about prestige and family name and all that stuff. And that some people can like other people just for who they are and not for what they have. And I think that's a pretty awesome lesson for Horgus to have learned and for all of us to learn. So yeah, he's changed. You've really changed. There is this Mr. Show skit all about you've really changed that makes me laugh. Mr. Show was a genius show. All right, but let's get into some dragon talk. I think I got some spunk in me for dragon talk. That sounded dirty. That's not the way I meant it. Oh man, let's do it. Jason, you kick us off, man.
Just listen to your latest episode, and I had to pause before Daniel's calls to point out that no, dragons have exceptional intelligence in AD&D, first edition, no question about it. But, you know, that doesn't diminish the high intelligence of the Elder Things, the great race that the Shagas over, you know, rebelled against and defeated. So if they were able to defeat, you know, their masters that had, a ton more intelligence than them, then obviously they're used to, fighting against creatures with much greater intelligence and can overcome them. So, you know, I don't know how much that intelligence really helps. But I refer you again to Sandy Peterson's video, which says you need lightning guns or you need to join them. Or you just need to run away. And those are your only options.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. I will say, though, that the Shagas overcoming the Elder Things, right? That was... The Shagas were working from the inside. They got the drop on the Elder Things. The Elder Things weren't expecting it. I don't know. I still think... I don't know, man. It's hard to imagine what a super intelligent creature would do for me, because I am not. I am absolutely not. But somebody who is super intelligent is Daniel, and he's got some stuff to say. So, Daniel, take it away, dude.
Hey, Joe. Yeah, I do agree with you. But as usual, I think we often agree. We just say things different ways. I think it all comes down to how you play it. I personally play games for the genres that they're meant to emulate. So I would not play an adventuring party going out to kill things and call Cthulhu. That's just not what I would do. So, and that is exactly why I said, because you said, what's the difference between Call of Cthulhu and a first level party? And that was my answer. I wouldn't play it that way. If you just look at mechanics, then whatever, that is what it is. But I did overlap two different editions, and I did make it clear. In BX and most other editions, you don't need a magic weapon to hit a dragon, only in OD&D. So in the OD&D game, they needed a magic weapon, but all the other editions I played, they would not. So you'd be able to hire the bowman to do it. That is what I meant there. So different editions, different ways to do it.
Yeah, dude, I do. I think, Daniel, I think you and I agree on a lot of stuff. I don't necessarily agree that the genre of Cthulhu is just a bunch of investigators running away from trouble and solving mysteries. I mean, you said you wouldn't want to play a group of investigators going out to fight monsters because that's not the genre. I point you to the Dunwich Horror. That's literally what that story is about. And that's one of Lovecraft's most beloved stories. So I don't think it's against the genre of Call of Cthulhu to do that. I mean, how many scenarios have been written where the investigators are hunting down cultists and fighting cultists to stop them from raising up one of the old ones and stuff? A ton. So yeah, I don't know. I feel like people think that Call of Cthulhu is just supposed to be this investigation game where you have to run away from everything and that Lovecraft is the only inspiration. But I remember reading, I forget who the story was by. It might have been Derliff. But it was a story about a guy who would, you know, he would use like the elder sign. He had all these little stones with the elder sign written on them, and he would like fight mythos beings. And so, yeah, I don't know. I think Call of Cthulhu, the genre of Call of Cthulhu, is much broader than just let's go to a library, discover that there's some ancient evil, and then run away. So again, though, it does all come down to play style. I don't know, man. I like Dunwich Horror. That's probably my favorite Lovecraft story. And I think that right there explains, that's what I think about when I think of Call of Cthulhu. I think of the Dunwich Horror. I don't think of like the Prince or something, or what's that one with the ghoul who doesn't know it's a ghoul and then figures out it's a ghoul at the end of the story and it's all psychological and awesome and cool. But I'll think about the actual story of Call of Cthulhu. That's all about like fighting cultists and monsters and craziness. Like those are the things I think about. Call of Cthulhu and the Dunwich Horror are both like action packed. They're not just about running away and spending all your time in the library. So yeah, man, I don't know. Like, you know, Jason and you talked about, I think it would be fun to run you guys through some Cthulhu just to show you another side of what the game can do and what it's also designed to do. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you'd be interested in it because, you know, like you said, you just said you wouldn't be interested. So I don't know, man. The offer's out there. I have no idea when it would happen. But yeah, as for the challenge that you and Jason put out, I called in a message to him. I don't know if he's played it yet, but I did totally accept the challenge, and I would like to run you guys through some Cthulhu sometime. So yeah, we'll have to get that figured out. And then as for the magic arrows thing, okay, that makes more sense. Though, yeah, I don't know, man. I think a dragon would be too smart just to fly within bowshot. I don't know, right? I still don't know how great an army of longbowmen would be, because they'd have to be clustered up for their arrows to be at all effective, and the dragon could just fly over them out of range and then come down, swoop, and breathe on them, and then they're all dead. I don't know. But you got more stuff to say about fighting dragons, so keep going, dude.
Also, I think, I don't know if it's out yet, but when I spoke with Jason about the Shoggoth the second time, I think we came to the conclusion that it really would matter if the dragon could fly. And just a few other like clarifications. In OD&D and BX and AD&D, there's a chance dragons sleep. That was part of the plot of the thing. They knew the dragon was asleep because of a certain amount of time, so they had to get there. Never did they get there before the dragon woke up, though, but that was part of it. So they got the dragon in its lair, which was useful, so it wasn't outside, except all but once. And they did have to use magic to do it. I mean, I'm not going to say they didn't use magic, but again, that was the adventure. People use magic all the time. Think about Clash of the Titans, right? Like, Perseus would not have been able to beat the Kraken, right, without Medusa's head. Although Medusa's head did them no good in this case, because the guy that had it had that frightful presence happen to him and ran. Oh, and one final thing. I guess I probably misspoke. They didn't cheer for me, but I do think you're right about crits and people cheering. They cheered for the young lady who had never played an OSR game before, who had only played a handful of board games. It was her first time, and she made the final blow that killed the dragon. And that was pretty awesome. So I think that's it, right? When players feel like that they've succeeded or lost in like an epic way. In the DCC one, when I met some of those guys after, they were talking about how epic it was, how some of their characters died. Because DCC Dragons, if you've not looked at DCC Dragons, I recommend you do. They're pretty cool. Like the one they fought could turn things to stone by looking at it. It could, it had a breath weapon, obviously, and a few other pretty cool features. So anyways, yeah, Joe, I think we agree. I mean, whatever works for you. And I just don't think a Shoggoth would ever fight a dragon, but they're both fierce and both amazing creatures.
Yeah, dude. DCC is a game I really want to check out more. I've played in a one shot that Jason ran, but it was a funnel. And as Jason has said several times, a funnel isn't a great way to get a feel for DCC, Dungeon Crawl Classics. So I don't really feel like I've played it. And it seems like such an awesome system. And I love everything I hear about it, especially the way the magic works. And then what you were just talking about with the dragon can turn stuff to stone. I bet a bunch of the monsters in there are like wacky. And I love that. Yeah, dude, I really want to. You know, I bought a bunch of DCC dice not too long ago thinking I was going to run it in person. And that's just kind of never panned out. And I don't know. We'll see. But I do want to play more DCC. Yeah, man. And then just epic shit at the gaming table is the coolest. It's the best. This one time, a party of mine, they were fighting like this evil unicorn, this evil black unicorn, and it was sort of kicking their ass. It ended up, they killed it and they were all pretty hurt, and then rupturing out of the evil unicorn was a shadow demon, and now they have to fight this shadow demon, and everyone was all beat up and it was crazy, and there was going back and forth, and the shadow demon, they have this spell and ability called Magic Jar, which is a spell that's been around for a while. But you basically, what it does, if the target fails its save, you rip that creature's soul out of its body and you inhabit its body. And it was going to do that to my buddy Woody. And then that would have been a total party kill, because Woody's character would have just murdered the other two characters in the group. Because he had like the most hit points, plus he was like a martial type character, and they were kind of low on hit points and everything. It would have been a bloodbath. And Woody needed to roll something like a 19 or something to pass his save, and he rolled a 20, and it was just like the coolest fucking thing. And they ended up beating the shadow demon, and it was just, everyone was just so hyped, and it was the best. So yeah, I that the lady you were talking about at your table, that's just such a good feeling. It's such an awesome feeling. And I absolutely love it. And that's why I love these games. Because the dice play such a big role. I think that's... I love that. I love that about these games. You know, I love that the dice help build the world and tell the tale of what's going on. It's... Oh, man. That's why I never fudge dice. That's why I don't get people that do. And speaking of that, I managed to catch the practice live stream for Dungeon Minister. If you guys aren't familiar, Dungeon Minister is a YouTube channel. It's this this priest, I forget, he's not a Catholic priest, I forget what he is, living in like Wisconsin, and he's currently running D&D for his three boys who are like 14 to 8 and his wife, and they're playing Beckme, which is the basic expert rules of Dungeons and Dragons, or an early edition if you're not familiar. And he just tells the tales of the games that he runs, and it's the channel's great. He seems like a super super cool dude and an awesome dad and a really good dungeon master. But early on he talked about how he wouldn't kill the players because they're his kids, right? And what's He wouldn't kill the characters. He also wouldn't kill the players. But, you know, they're his wife and kids, so he's not going to murder their characters. And so on the live stream, because he had also mentioned later on that his children had seen a couple of his episodes. So I asked him, I was like, hey, do your kids know that you're not going to kill their characters? And if they do know that, has that changed the way they played? And he said I don't know if he's told them yet, but that's off the table now. He said they've been playing long enough. Like, if they die, they die. And I was like, yeah, boy. I think that's awesome. He talked about how he's not out to kill them and he won't throw them up against an insane fight unless there's a way out. Like, for instance, in this one episode, they were being chased by a huge pack of werewolves, of probably like 20 werewolves or something. And at one point, one of his sons was like, we should turn around and fight. And there was an NPC there. And so the NPC was like, that would be a very, very bad idea. We can't handle that. And they were like, oh, okay, Dad, we get it. So he'll give them a way out. And yeah, it's just a very wholesome, nice channel. The dude seems like a solid, solid dude. So check out Dungeon Minister if you're ever in the mood just to hear like fun retellings of fun adventures in a very wholesome way. It's great. It's fantastic. Yeah, man. I don't know where I was going. So yeah, Daniel, for sure. Let's murder some dragons. Let's fucking play some Cthulhu and give people experiences where they can all cheer for their players and for themselves. Hell yeah. Well, yeah, I sort of got off topic there, but that's cool, man. I like where that went. Awesome. Thank you, boys. Thank you, Jason and Daniel, for some awesome messages. I wouldn't really have had an episode today without them. I appreciate it. Yeah, still deep, deep into Gardens of the Moon. I just finished chapter 13 before I started recording. I told myself I had to stop and listen to some podcasts and put out an episode. Otherwise, I mean, that's what I'm getting right back into. That's what I'm getting right back into. But I just love it so much. There are so many big ideas in Malazan. And the characters change so much. To stay on the RPG a day topic of how has the character changed. Like, even in this first book, I'm about 2/3 of the way through it, the Gardens of the Moon. And even in this, you see character growth and the characters do start to form. They have these experiences which change them. And it's just such a well-crafted story. Plus, there's just such big ideas. Like, one of the reasons I love it, and I'll just mention one, is that the history of the world. So before humans became what they are, much like in our world, there were other species living, other sentient species living and striving and being people before humans were around. Just like on our world, except in their world, they have a much better idea of how things were. And there are still some writings and some legends from way back then that have trickled down. And they actually take those seriously instead of doing what we do here and being like, everything anyone said in the past was just a myth. It was all a myth. Nobody was ever literal back then. They were all just figurative speaking. And I just love that, right? Like, these other species are important that lived on this planet. They helped shape what we now see in our world. That's how it is in Malazan or Malazan. I say the Malazan Book of the Fallen as the title for the series, but then I'll say Malazan Empire. I don't know. It's crazy. But big, big ideas. And there's no wonder it's 3 million words for the whole series, which I learned from Ray Otis when he was talking about it. That's insane. That's insane. 3 million words. And I've read the whole series at least twice. And I'm going back for round 3. Anyway, I'm out of here. I got to get back to the book. Peace out. Another good thing about having screens in all the windows now is that that's just one more step somebody would have to go through before they could murder me. So that's always a good thing.